Hello all, good evening. Okay, it's 1 minute past six. It's time to get started. Look, and welcome all to the first OCM for 2026. It's very much going to be a year of challenge and new beginnings with the bridge closure and also the announcement of the sale of the Lawn Barracks. A warm welcome to everyone. It's good to see people in the audience, especially former councillor John Kness, thank you. Okay, who was a councillor for 8 years at the town. Thank you all for your time. Before we commence, and this being our first meeting of the year, do some introductions. Okay, so I'll go around the room, starting to my left. We have councillor Mark Wilson. Okay, we have councillor Cliff Collinson, councillor Jenny Harrington, and then new councillor Stephanie Boyd. We all know our guru, Janine Main, aka, obviously, my name is Tony Notaro, the mayor of the town, the CEO, Jonathan Throssell, exec manager, Fraser Henderson. Also, thank you for coming, also, James Bannerman, our town planner, yes?
Yes.
Okay. We also have the exec manager, Jake Scott, exec manager, Peter Kosian, deputy mayor, aka, Lucinda Maywood, Councillor Andrew White, last but not least, Councillor Beck Cutter. So welcome all. Look, before we commence into proceedings, on behalf of Council, I would like to acknowledge the Woodjatjungka people as the traditional custodians on the land on which this meeting is taking place, and pay my respects to the elders past, present and emerging. The first announcement, particularly to the members of the gallery, are advised that this meeting will be audio recorded. No council decision from tonight's meeting will be communicated or implemented until 12 noon on the first clear working day after this meeting, unless council by resolution carried at the meeting requests the CEO to take immediate action, implement the decision. Okay, in attendance today, we've all gone through those we have, and we have how many? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Is that right? Seven members of. Okay. In terms of apologies, we have apologies for Councillor Anthony Brockman, who had a conflict with a Fremantle Port Committee meeting this evening. Okay, he'll be approved. Apologies. Moving on to. Disclosure of interest, financial proximity and impartiality. Do we have any conflicts of interest? Thank you, Councillor Boyd.
For item 13.1, proximity interest.
Okay. And that is because you live directly across the medical centre, yeah?
That's okay. Correct.
Thank you. Any other conflict of interest? Thank you, we've noted that. Moving on, public question times. We've got some people in the audience that have some questions. So let's start with Kim. Kim, yes, Kim Waters? If you can, yes, please, yeah.
Thank you. Okay, so my question to Council and my concerns to Council are the speeding on George Street and in the surrounding streets. We've had a number of cars exceeding 40. There's a sign saying 40 next to the kindy and there's one up the road, but I don't believe there's enough presence of signs and something to stop the amount of traffic that's coming through now, especially now that Main Roads has changed the direction of traffic. I just had an incident at the front of my house. Some fellow was coming down Sewell Street very fast. He went through George Street, mm-hmm. and I walked down into the street and I put my hand out and I said, "Could you slow down?" And he called me a C-U-N-T and spat at me. So the reality is that's not a one-off incident. Mm. So my concern is something has to be done because George Street is very narrow. The amount of people that just don't either don't see this, the 40K sign or don't it doesn't apply to them. Someone is actually going to get killed or someone is going to get hit. The amount of near misses is frightening, and I really think now council has an obligation to keep Plympton Ward as safe as they possibly can. Mums and dads, kids, dogs, old people, everyone in that area shouldn't have to deal with the speed that is occurring in a very, very condensed area. So that is my major concern. Okay. I've been abused a number of times asking people, could they slow down? I don't have a problem telling people, could you just slow down because there's lots of kids around? But I'm constantly getting abused for it. So there has to be more signage. There has to be, council has to step up and either do some sort of street calming devices or more signage or I don't know, but something has to be done.
Yeah, thank you, Kim. I'm assuming we'll take that under notice and then respond. I do know we are writing to the main roads about the bridge closure and its impact. Mm-hmm. Okay, we'll have to reinforce that in that. But in terms of your other points, I think we'll take that under notice, CEO.
Well, if I may, Mr. Mayor, if I could just reframe your statement as a question. You're asking what is council doing about the concerns you've expressed about speeding?
Yes.
On George Street.
And calming the traffic down.
Ms. Scott would be able to provide an initial response.
Okay, thank you. Yes, Ms. Scott.
Yes, so generally in terms of speeds in the town, we have very few areas where speeds are actually exceeding 40 kilometres an hour in terms of the 85th percentile, which is the standard number that we use. Having said that, that's not to say that there aren't individual incidents of speeding, because there are. There are two ways of addressing speeding. The first is speed limits, as you've talked about, and the second is those engineering interventions. Speed limits on their own have an impact, but generally you need those engineering interventions to support that. And we are currently looking, Main Roads have a funding program called the Low Cost Urban Road Safety Funding Program, where they fund 100% of the interventions, and we just have to do the project management, and I believe we do the design. So we're currently actively pursuing that. The first stage, we're reviewing all of the areas within the town to work out where we would prioritise those actions, but it's actually something that we're actively looking at this moment in time to start to bring in some additional speed control interventions of the type that you're talking about.
So that's going to happen in what time frame?
So the time frame, that the funding can take a while, so the initial process at the moment is we're prioritising areas, and then once we've done that, then we'd be able to look at what the funding demands would be and where we can fit them into the programme in terms of other priorities. Sure. So if it didn't happen and I'm not saying it wouldn't happen in 26, 27, but if it didn't happen in 26, 27, I'd be very surprised if we weren't there by 27, 28.
So is George Street a priority? Given that there's so many cafes and restaurants and there's a kindy and there's a park and, so it's high volume people, people coming to restaurants. I actually think it needs to be a priority. Yeah.
So that's one of the, we actually have a consultant looking at that at this precise moment in time. So they're reviewing our speeds, they're reviewing our crash data, and they're actually going to prioritise across the town which areas we work on and in what order.
Okay. The other thing I want to raise, which was...
Yeah. Excuse me, there is an item on the agenda tonight.
Jack, just take off.
There is also an item on the agenda tonight, but part of the planning that we've done with the community up there is about creating a shared pedestrian space within George Street, which would necessitate slowing of the speeds to around 20 kilometres. That's being explored tonight, and there's an item on the agenda about trying to kick that project off. That would have a similar sort of time frame to what Ms. Scott's provided you.
Brilliant. Thank you. The other thing, just very quickly on my question, was just because of Main Roads has changed the direction of traffic. Mm. I understand that. I don't have a problem with what's happening. My concern is that at the end of Sewell Street, where the Tradewinds is, there's a no entry, and a lot of the cars now are getting very confused when they come around. So they're all coming up Sewell Street through the no entry, and then speeding up and then realising that they're on George Street and then doing the lap. So there's a lot of confusion whether there needs to be some sort of signpost, you know, somewhere. But really, they shouldn't be coming up. But there's a huge volume of traffic now coming up Sewell Street through the no entry because of the confusion of the where they have to go.
I think that can be taken on notice in terms of what we can do in regards to that, because it is a known hotspot around that.
It is a hotspot.
Around that area.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you, Kim.
Yeah, no worries.
Okay.
Thank you.
And I'm also assuming that we'll get back to you in writing as well. Is that correct?
Yes.
So thank you.
That'd be great, because I can let the entire neighbourhood know, because I've got a Plimpton Watch app, so everyone is.
Thank you for your time. Thank you. Who's next? I've forgotten the name. Is it Julie or? Yeah, come forward. Sorry, and just type your name and your address, please. Thank you.
We've done it before. Good evening. My name's Carolyn Austin. So I have owned a property in Sewell Street for 10 years. I've lived in it for over five. So directly opposite number 42, there is a fire hydrant. Now, over the years since we've lived there, I would say for the first two, that people didn't park over it as much. I would definitely say since La Lune came on board, nothing against La Lune, and I'm not saying it's their staff, but my issue is over the last 2 to 3 years, I have spoken to council, I've spoken to the parking, well, the rangers, who do the parking, primarily to say that the signage is really poor. So it's faded on the road. People don't see the H sign. There's also a white triangle. There's no signage on the fence, and it is a fence, not a wall, where there's a commercial property. I do think some other councils do have a sign in head view of if a car's parking there. I have, as I say, I've spoken to the rangers about it. I've spoken to council. I have also phoned the Department of Fire and Emergency Services to ask whose responsibility it is, firstly, to get it repainted so that people can see it. And it is actually, it's their responsibility to do it, but it is actually a responsibility of the council to let them know that it is faded.
Okay.
The rangers know, because I speak to them frequently about it. What I'm irked about myself was, I was asked by council end of last year to put it in writing. Again, busy, busy, busy. There's lots going on at the moment too. But anyway, but my point now is that over the last couple of years, cars don't get penalised, which I'm not saying is actually now a bad... It is a bad thing, because you don't want them to park over a fire hydrant, but because they see it constantly as just a parking space. Okay. Everybody going up and down, again, it's Sewell Street, but it's nothing to do with it. They just see that, oh, well, that's where cars park. So, because they don't notice it. So now, not saying there's been a slight change in maybe which rangers... They get nothing. They used to get a caution if it was their first time. But for months, cars park there literally all day. And nothing is done about it. So when I phoned the DFES, they said, look, we will get on to remarking it. Might not happen before the end of the year. But again, they haven't done anything about it. So council haven't told them. Anyway, it's not apparently council don't think, or so I'm told by the ranger, council don't think that it's their issue. It's their issue to police it, and surely part of policing it is saying it's not well identified. That is basically
Thank
my
you.
Point.
Okay. CEO, because I think there's a number of issues there, particularly around the rangers and then the DFS.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. I think that's something we'll have to take on notice to find out exactly what our responsibility will be versus Department of Fire and Emergency Services. And at the very least, we can contact Department of Fire and Emergency Services to follow it up as well.
And they said it is council's, it's their responsibility to, if it's faded, to do it, but it is council's responsibility to let them know that it needs done.
Yeah, yeah.
But I have let them know it's been done, so it's it has been alerted to them.
Yeah. We'll confirm all of that.
And are you also asking, though, you also ask, because I also noted that no infringements have been made, is that correct?
Of recent.
So
John has probably, as he's saying, he before used to get people, it's, they don't know, nobody goes near it now.
And that is our responsibility, isn't that, CEO?
What I'd like to double check is exactly what our responsibility is vis-a-vis parking in front of fire hydrants.
Yep.
And then we can provide accurate response. Good.
Thank you. Thank
great.
You.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Would you like to come up?
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. I rang up to find out how to do this, so if you will indulge me, Mayor, I'm not going to read you all this. It's just that rather than speaking...
So your name and address... Your name and address first, please.
Leanne Johnston. I live on Preston Point Road.
Okay.
At the top of the Nij, and correct me if I'm mispronouncing, Neagabup track.
Ooh. I think we call it something different. What's Councillor Conson? Neagabup track?
Neagabup track. Okay. So I've got a couple of props here, and I thought rather than just ask the question, which is here on the end of my one page, if you could indulge me, I'll give you a little bit of background as to why I'm...
Hang on. But before you start, what's the time limit for question time?
6:18.
It's about 5 minutes, but with the background...
It'll be less than 5 minutes.
So 15 minutes for the whole thing, is that what you're asking? Sorry.
I'll be less than 5 minutes. Thank you. Brownie's on it.
Thank you.
Okay. January 23, I wrote to the town stating my concern about the state of the footing of that Neagabup track. I and my husband moved there 3 years ago after we retired, and we spend many, many hours sitting out the front looking over the river and talking to the public who wander along that track. And my concern was up to you after I saw people slip, skid and fall on the loose stones at the northern end of the track, where there's an incline of approximately a metre and a half, and the section goes over 10 metres. And I actually took a photo so you could understand how the wall goes down, and the incline is quite great. And it goes down directly to the cliff top here. And then it goes around the corner. But the stones are very, very big, and they're on top of hard limestone. So what happens is everybody that walks along there generally has rubber walking shoes on, and they slip and they skid as they're going down the hill on these stones. On the flat, it's not so bad. People can tend to keep their balance. But on this 10-metre incline, it's quite bad. So I watched this for a while, and then I asked council and suggested a short-term fix would be to cover and compact that 10-metre section. In March, which was 2 months later, I received a reply from the town, and Hayley advised that work had been done the Merg Cowan Park end and that additional work would begin at the northern end in the next financial year. I replied and said it should be deemed urgent because since that first note to them, I had witnessed another serious fall, and it was actually a lady in the next strata, and this is what she did to her knee when she fell on that section of incline, in that 10 metres of incline. And I actually sent that with the thing and said, you know, this is why I'm so concerned. Mm-hmm. Hayley replied to that saying nothing would happen prior to the 1st of July, and I quote, she said... Users should remain mindful that some loose and uneven surfaces may be present and take due care, as the track is an informalised bush track, which is why the town does not promote the track for cyclists or as a formalised footpath. Since then, though, several signs promoting the track have been erected along Riverside Drive and at the base of two of the stairways that actually connect up to the track. And this has resulted in a noticeable increase in the user numbers that use it. It's no longer just dog walkers and locals now. We are both regularly speaking to strangers, people that go on cruise ships and walk around and walk along the river, people that are out walking that have been to Dome or been to the Left Bank, seen the sign and decide to follow the stairs. And we're regular. They stop to chat to us if we're sitting out the front and admire or photograph the view. Mm-hmm. In November 23, I emailed Hayley again saying that since we were well into the new financial year and nothing had since happened, did the town have an updated timeframe for the repairs? She answered promptly that commencement was anticipated in February 24. It didn't happen. February 24 and 25 financial year went.
Okay.
My last inquiry was verbal to the town, and I was told the funding was no longer in the budget. Instead, two more signs have been placed at the incline in question. They look like that, little yellow ones, and they're about this high. Mm. And they are already others there that warn of the cliff risk, which is quite important because there's no safety rail on that corner. And what happens is kids on their bikes go down that corner, hit there and swim around on the loose stones, and the cliff is literally there. And it's a cliff. It's a 60-foot cliff. It's pretty bizarre. Anyway, so they put two new signs and said that it was no longer in the budget. The new signs read, caution, uneven surface. And I doubt that either of those signs is actually going to protect the council if someone wants to build a good law case. Here for your perusal, that I will leave you, because I don't expect you to answer the question now, are samples of the track base, so you know what I'm talking about, how it's just that on hard limestone. And photos of the incline, which I've showed you.
Yep.
And also photos of injuries since sustained. This is a lady who sprained her toe. This is a lady who comes every day. She is a local. She's 88 and she walks that track every day and she says it's what keeps her alive. Okay, she's old, but she's probably more active than I am. She gets down at those exercise things at the corner and she does all those things. She gets on the bike. She's absolutely amazing. You'll see her up at Pilates if any of you go to Pilates. Her name's Cheryl and she's absolutely amazing.
Okay.
Here's another man. He sprained his ankle. This is in the 3 years since I wrote the original note. There's a lady's knee. There's another knee. This is from all from this same 10-metre section that runs down the side.
Okay.
It doesn't happen on the flat, and I live here. So if you could please, my question for the council is, when will you put that work back on the agenda? I'm not asking you to do the whole track, just fix that 10-metre section that is so, so dangerous. Because not a week goes by that we're retired now, so we sit out there with a coffee in the morning, a wine in the night, and we see something happen every single week. It's only a matter of time.
Okay.
And I'm really frightened. So I thought, well, come here and I'll sleep better knowing I've tried. If anything happens, it's up to you if you sleep better, if you act.
Thank you. Thank you,
so
Leanne,
thank you very
for providing that. Look, if I can speak for the town, safety is our primary concern. So thank you for raising it, and obviously we'll get back to you in regards to the question.
Yeah. I've got one.
See,
well, if I may, through the chair, we have previously responded to this,
but
I'm more than happy to.
Of the pictures, but I will leave that with him. And the rocks.
I'm not sure if we need the rocks, Leanne, but.
Oh, look.
Oh, no, don't put them back on the track.
It's my props. I prepared for this. Thank you very much for your time.
Hang on, I think the CEO.
Yeah, I just wanted to acknowledge that, notwithstanding everything you said, I note that we have previously responded to it, maybe to explain why it's not currently on our work schedule, for the benefit of yourself and for others, is that following an inspection that was actually undertaken, this track is actually performing as expected for a natural bush trail, and that, I think that's the key message. It's a natural bush trail. It's generally well compacted, some loose areas, and that loose areas really are, rather than being a maintenance failure, it's about the environmental conditions of that part of the track. So the engineering intervention was considered impractical and disproportionate to try and fix it because there's terrain constraints, there's access limitations, there's a natural character of the site. That's why we haven't gone for any other interventions other than making it more aware for people who use the track by the updated signage and so forth, that it's for walkers only. It's warning about the fact it's natural surfaces, cliffs, loose material, that way to address the community concern. Mm. That's not to say that council may not want us to revisit it, but that's the reason why we haven't got anything in our works program, because we've undertaken the assessment and decided signage to let people know it's a natural bush track, and there are some hazards implicit with that and inherent with that. That's where we've got to at the moment.
The amount that you spent putting up the signs and promoting it more so that more people would come, someone would go along once a month and just sweep up those that 10 metres worth of those really big rocks that are causing all the slips and the falls. So sweep them to the side. I could go down and do it, but it's not my... I don't own the track.
And thank you for raising the safety issue, because, like I said, it's we'll definitely reconsider.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. There's no other questions? Okay. Moving on. Oh, good timing. Here we are. So it's time for presentations, and we do have a presentation this evening. Before I ask these members to come up, we have today in the audience, we have Fraser Maywood, we have Lee Nichols and Emma Farr. These are all, I guess, former members of the Climate Action Reference Group. I would like to personally thank them for their contribution to the town and the climate and the CARG. Your time and ideas and thoughtful engagement has been greatly valued throughout your involvement. More particularly, your work has been instrumental in helping the town deliver its climate action goals, and your input has made a meaningful difference to the direction and the strength of our sustainability initiatives. While your membership might come to an end, I also extend my appreciation to your commitment to climate action and the community collaboration, and thank you for your willingness to stay connected to a more informal capacity. I would also like to call out, I guess, particularly Fraser and Lee, who are one of the original members of the CARG group, who helped create the action, the Climate Action Strategy and later the Action Plan. Thanks to you all for the many meetings you've attended and the many conversations that you've also enjoyed throughout the events, including the George Street Festival and the other community events organised by to generate the interest in our community to become more climate focused. Not forgetting, not forgetting the involvement that Lee had in generating the funding for the Kindy solar panels, which came straight out of, I think it was what your idea, wasn't it, Lee? I think. Okay, and that was then that allowed that the Kindy to purchase its solar panels, and then also obviously lessen the impact on climate. I wish nothing but the very best for all of you in your future endeavours, and hope you stay in touch and close to the town's environment journey. We also continue working towards our net zero emission for the years ahead. So thank you all three. I do have something for you. Okay. If you can come up. And you're all welcome to stay, but...
No,
good. Thank you. Thank you, Lee. Cheers.
Okay. Moving on to deputations. I believe we might have a few tonight. Normally we start with the... applicant is he here today? Lawrence, I see the... Okay. Is it Greg?
Gary.
Would you like to deputise for your item? So, do you want to come up? Sorry, do you want to come up? Yeah.
We spent a lot of time.
And just press the. There we are.
That one? Okay.
Okay.
We spent a lot of time in researching the project and spent a lot of time with planning, and we revised a lot of our work as a result of working with the planning department. And it was a very good outcome. We're quite happy with what we've submitted.
Okay.
And we're very happy with the report that's been put up.
Okay, thank you.
I'm really only here for
questions.
To answer questions.
And this is the time to do it. So I guess I urge, and as I've said previously, this is our first item for planning to come to council with our new elected members. So I'm allowing quite a freedom amount of time. Does anyone have questions of Gary? Yes, Councillor Collinson?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I was just saying I have spoken to the affected neighbour who seemed to think there might be some room for some sort of compromise or movement on that. And I was just wondering if you were open to any of that and if there is any possibility that you could, you know, tinker a little bit around the edges to help make it a little bit more acceptable to the affected neighbour.
To the affected neighbour? No. No, we've researched it well enough to know, and I spoke to the neighbour, especially regarding the paths that crossed the site, and we realised that there was an access position. There's exposure for anybody crossing the site because it's a private property, so the offer was to allow the medical centre to lease that portion. And she wasn't interested in doing that, taking responsibility for the paths, which gave service to her medical centre. So we're going to remove the paths so they can't cross the site, because it would be a responsibility to that we would have to a public crossing of private property. The rest of the proposal that we've made is strictly according to the codes and what the city has allowed with the new redevelopment and the community awareness and facility and sustainability. Everything has been studied enormously in making up a proposal. So that's where we sit, and what we've submitted is we're quite happy with.
Okay. Any other questions, elected members? I just have one quick one, Gary. I believe the commercial use will be downstairs, and that's. Do you have what's the plan for that commercial use?
It's a small office.
Okay.
And at the moment, I work in a granny flat that we moved our office to during COVID, and that little office is perfectly sized for our office.
Okay.
So not only are we moving to the top level. We're moving closer to my son who lives around the corner. It's a beautiful environment. It's a lovely place to live. And so we'll relocate our office to that.
Okay, lovely.
That small office.
And I guess my follow-up question, in terms of the use of car bays and so forth, do you see a high traffic flow for your commercial use at all?
No, most of our work, we're registered in four states.
Okay.
Most of our work is Victoria and New South Wales, with some work in Western Australia, but we set up to specialise in highway service centres, and that's where our major work is.
Okay.
But, you know, COVID, and I worked in Asia for 4 or 5 years across Singapore and Manila, Macau, you know, New Delhi. We worked out of the cloud. Our office is based a lot in the cloud, and we have a very small staff, myself and my son, but we produce a lot of work as a result of rehoning our work to cloud-based and three-dimensional specialisation.
Mm.
So we're quite comfortable with the size we are. We don't see us demanding a lot of space. Mm. Very few of our clients visit us.
Mm.
So, in fact, one in the last 12 months. And he came from Victoria the other day. We've got a house on Port Arlington that we're doing for him.
Okay.
So, no, I don't see us having a big demand at all.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions before I close it? Councillor Hamilton?
Just to clarify for me, please, if you would, the apartment 3 is connected to the terrace, and is that the only facility that's connected to that, or is that...?
Yes.
Thank you.
The reason for... Would you like me to answer? The reason that we limited it to our level, because we realised that the rest of the tenants would be coming up through the building. Although we have changed, we upgraded the lift to a wheelchair lift, and we did a lot of work on universal accessibility. So anybody going to the top floor would inevitably use the lift. But also the maintenance meant that probably we would get the better use and sharing the maintenance of a space that wouldn't be used a lot by the lower levels seemed a bit difficult and unfair. So, and then on top of that, I have 5 children with their partners and 9 grandchildren. So part of the reason for having that in sole use for the top floor is because it's our top floor and we need a breakout space.
Okay.
I just wasn't sure because of the lift. I thought maybe that someone was going up from the second floor as well.
If other parts of our family decide to live in the lower levels, then obviously we'll change the rules. But at this stage, a unit in Malcolm Street, so that was the bit of marketing I did, but didn't end up getting him to buy the lower one.
Okay, and I guess my last, and this is not a planning question at all, but the site is quite an awkward site in terms of the size. And this site has come before us before,
yes,
with planning, and yes, obviously failed to get built, and then been obviously sold. And so, do you have any concerns about the actual build?
No,
and the impact of the build and the
no, not at all. I'm a registered builder, mm-hmm, and I've done major projects and minor projects. I'm an ex-farmer, so I've done shed building. But no, don't see it at all. Sean Sikri.
Okay.
I was introduced to Sean, and he's a very talented and wary builder, and he's local.
Mm.
And when he suggested that the parking could be used, they're just across the road, parking can use their parking. We then chose a former building which is no bricks, so we're not having to have brick packs, and we've got preformed wall system that would be formed, and we would have a single concrete that would fill the walls. So the way we've chosen to build it is a minimalist interference form, and we've done a lot of work on the methodology. So no, I don't think there would be unnecessary inconvenience, frankly, with the community.
Okay.
And we'll minimise that anyway, because I certainly, in my own experience, have the ability to minimise and work with a concerned manner in the community.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Gary. If there's no further questions, thank you for your time.
Oh, my pleasure.
Okay.
I'm available after if you...
Absolutely. Thank questions. You. John or Dr. Fiennes? Dr. Fiennes, would you like to come up?
Thank you. Can I respond to one of the comments that's been made already before I do my deputation?
It's fine, thank you.
It is in my deputation, but I think it's very important. It was one of the concerns I had about the planner's report that needed correction. I was cold called without a caller's introduction, not asking whether I was free to speak, inviting me for a coffee just before Christmas, and I don't think that constituted my refusal for a lease agreement, which now appears in the submission on page 54 as the reason for demolition of pedestrian access to the medical centre. Now, such a lease agreement would actually need to be agreed by the owner of the medical centre, which is Sonic, and not the owner of the medical centre building, which is myself. So I'm quite keen that this may be progressed. So I just wanted to put that on the table so that there wasn't any misunderstanding. Okay. I'm back again.
Thank you.
Thanks very much, Mayor, Council members and the planning team, to address this meeting and discuss the application, which I've done with most of you in the last couple of days. And I firstly want to say that I don't oppose a building on 14 Silas Street. I realise the constraints of this 211-metre-squared block, but I also trust that the Council have fully interrogated the planner's report. So my opposition is to the scale of this building and its impact on the neighbouring amenity, which is, of course, the East Fremantle Medical Centre, where I don't work anymore, but I have a great concern for the staff and the members of the public who use it. And I don't believe that this particular issue is properly addressed in the planner's report. The submission utilises the full length of the block for commercial gain and disregards the adjoining building at number 12. And this is in part achieved by ignoring not one or two, but eight items as detailed in the planner's report. And the report recommends council approval and members around this table to accept variation in eight items, which are safeguard recommendations of LP, S3, T, PRG, and the R codes. These documents are considered best practice for local planning, town centre planning, and associated residential codes. And there's enormous consultation prior to these documents being endorsed, and those involved in the process and ratepayers would be concerned to see that they can just be simply overwritten by lucrative-driven developments at the recommendation of a town planner to the council. And I acknowledge that some variations are not uncommon with building applications, but eight does seem to me to be excessive, and I would like these discussed. So there's lots of fine print to sort out, you know, access to the medical centre, lift room, the air conditioning units, blah, blah. But the bold print of these eight units, of which eight variations, three variations revolve around maximising financial return by promoting three apartment residences with the size, layout and depth completely compromised. There's incorrect front lot to boundary setbacks. There's a shortfall in car parking requirements. There's out of proportion building height. Overplot ratio has been allowed. And this is a very important point, which John will actually enlarge on in his deputation. There's less than recommended width of awnings over the footpath. There's more to be said about that. I do understand council has to make a decision on the application as presented and be guided, not necessarily directed, by their planning officers. But I've been reassured that decision-making is not coloured by council wanting to avoid the expense of a possible state tribunal attendance should the application not be approved. I note the argument given by the planner is that commercial buildings have no right to visual privacy, but we are talking about light-filled, balconied medical centre consultation rooms, not typical office space. In fact, these particular rooms were built by the same builder, Sean Sucree, who is now the builder for the proposed building at 14 Silas. I'd also just heard that there are five children and nine grandchildren. No, hang on. 40, some, anyway, I wrote it down how many five children, nine grandchildren. So I'm thinking about this roof garden, which overlooks the medical centre consultation rooms, now being a play area for this number of people. I think a certain amount of common sense and discretion needs to be considered, because not all apples are the same. And when we're talking about the impact of medical consultation rooms being overlooked, it's quite different from thinking about an office space being overlooked, where you can just perhaps put an awning or something down to close out that window. Light is important. We've discussed that. I would welcome an option to this decision being deferred today, with an opportunity for mediation between the applicant and myself to achieve a more reasonable outcome and deal with the issue also that John is going to raise in his deputation. And last but not least, I've talked about honesty and moral integrity being important in any future developments, and highlighted examples of concern to date in this regard, which have found their way into the planner's report, and I think they do need correction. The meeting with myself to discuss the proposal with the builder didn't happen, and despite it saying it did in the submission, there was no meeting between me and Sean Sucree. There was, again, a very brief phone call. That planning report does note this. I've just made reference to the cold call about the lease agreement. Again, I'd like that corrected. And I also feel that there's a biased and misleading arborist report to approve mature trees being removed, without which, of course, the development would be much smaller. I'm sure I've gone well over my 3 minutes. I'm sure it used to be 5 minutes. I'm confident, anyway, that the council members will fully scrutinise the issues raised prior to a decision tonight. And I thank you all very much for your time, and particularly for the conversations that I've had with most of you over the last few days. Thank you.
Thank you.
Do you want me to stay here or go?
Oh, it's up to you. John, are you coming up?
Your moral support.
Thank you, Mayor and councillors, for the opportunity to speak to this. Obviously, it's a major concern for my client and the impact it has on her premises. Obviously, we've been through this situation before with previous application, which was a rather large development and rather interesting in its appearance, but nevertheless actually did make some reasonable concessions to the amenity of the medical centre, particularly the rooms to the rear. This application, while it might be smaller and a little bit more conventional, makes absolutely no concessions, none, to the amenity of the medical centre at all. It completely obliterates the amenity of the medical centre, and it has done so under the sole basis of the town centre design guidelines, talking about nil setbacks. Now, the guidelines do say that, but the guidelines are also a guide under the fundamental part of the planning regime, which is the R Codes Volume 2 for medium and higher density apartment development. Those codes have a very well-constructed set of requirements, both qualitative and quantitative, that are meant to work together and are clearly designed to be supportive and encouraging of good development. So they're certainly not conservative requirements. They're actually very, very liberal, but they're meant to be read in total. And I would like to refer very briefly to the six most relevant parts that pertain. And these, I might stress, use the word must. They are requirements. They are not something that is just a motherhood statement that can then be ignored. And unfortunately, in the planner's report, they are virtually unreferenced at all, which is why this building has the ability to be before you with a recommendation for approval, while at the same time doing nothing to protect the amenity of the existing neighbour. So I'd like to read these out. From the RD Codes Volume 2, which are the principal guide in your approving this application. Part 1.4, 10 Design Principles, Bullet Point 3, Built Form and Scale, states, Good design ensures that the massing and height of the development is appropriate to its setting and successfully negotiates between existing built form and the intended future character of the local area. There is no way that this building in any way negotiates with its neighbour. The part further states that the design principles inform the design, the review, i.e. the planning report, and the decision-making processes, you guys tonight, for all developments under this policy. Part 2.4 of the R codes, side and rear setbacks, states that its intent, respecting the shared boundary, is fundamental to being a good neighbour. The relationship of built form to the property boundary must be carefully considered to balance the needs of new development with maintaining the amenity of adjacent sites. Part 3.1, site analysis and design response, notes that its intent, in areas undergoing change, which is the case with the town centre, the design response must respond to the planned future character of the locality while mitigating impacts on existing residents and developments. Part 3.2, orientation, states that its intent, design responses should demonstrate how building orientation seeks to balance and optimise the following considerations, including avoiding significant loss of amenity for neighbouring properties. Part 3.3, tree canopy and deep soil areas, states the planning of a development should make all reasonable efforts to retain appropriate existing trees within the site and have no significant impact on trees on land adjoining the property. Part 4.1, solar and daylight access, at its intent states, development must be sited and designed to optimise solar and daylight access for dwellings and open space, considering climatic conditions, both within the development and for adjoining properties and adjoining urban spaces. Now, those are just the most significant parts. They are major parts of the R codes. There is no way that this application in any way meets those requirements. And I don't see how a building can be approved with the discretion it requires from you where it clearly does not address any of those issues. It is quite obvious that this development has been completely designed to simply maximise the scale of the building on that very awkward site and has no regard for those requirements. And I stress they are requirements. They are not motherhood statements in the R codes. Further to that, I'd just like to say, and I could have done a great deal of detailed scrutiny of the report, but we haven't got the time for that here. The report, obviously the main issue is the bulk and scale of the building and the fact that it extends over the entire length of its boundary. That is a problem of both height and size. Now, the height of this building is referenced as being reasonable, although it requires discretion, because the R codes allow for buildings up to 12 metres high where you're dealing with three stories. Now, that's sort of correct, but let's accept it. The R codes, however, also control the size of the building by virtue of plot ratio. And plot ratio for R100 apartments under the R codes is 1.3 to 1. Your guidelines have a plot ratio of 2. So the extra height that is being referenced in the, you know, relative to the R codes is not being counterbalanced by the control that the R codes have by saying, well, okay, you can have height, but you can't necessarily have that much bulk. This building, according to the report, which is according to the applicant's information, has a plot ratio of 1.94 to 1. I cannot see how it comes anywhere near that. It clearly covers far more of the site than that and must be well over two. And I saw no reference in the report to any scrutiny of that. But nevertheless, the point is that these controls are meant to work together. And where you've got a plot ratio far in excess of what the R codes would allow for an R100 development, which this is, you clearly are not getting the quid pro quo. You're sort of just trying to get the best out of everything and put them all together and say this building can be as big as it is. That is completely inappropriate to the way the codes and the scheme and the guidelines are meant to work. I'll leave it at that. My main point is that this building clearly does not meet the requirements of the codes with regard to neighbour amenity. However, I want to also ask a question, and I was going to start with this, but I'll finish with it instead. Has this application been approved by the Department of Lands?
That's all.
Right. In that case, I would like to speak to the matter.
It hasn't been approved by the Department of Lands. We're not aware of any requirement for it to be approved. This is a planning application made under the Planning and Development Act, and it's been brought, rather than to a JDAP, to the Council for determination.
Okay.
Okay, so John, do you want a further comment?
Yes, look, as I understand it, and this is information that I've gained over a number of many years dealing with designing balconies and other structures that project over government land, and most recently in a project that I designed for the reinstatement of the verandas on the main building in the middle of George Street, on the corner of Sewell and George Street, where your town planner actually held back our application from coming to council on the strength of it needing, correctly, to have the approval of the Department of Lands, because habitable spaces of that development, part of the actual development, were not on our land. This application is the same. It has part of its application over the land owned by the state government, controlled by the Department of Lands. It requires their approval, at the very least as the owner of the land, and I might stress that the application form states very clearly that all owners of land must sign the application form. And as I understand it, partly from the advice of your own town planner, it also requires the approval of the Department of Lands. Now, this isn't an incidental part of this development. These apartments all rely on the balconies in order to be approvable. That you cannot have apartments that do not have open spaces connected to the main living rooms. Okay. And so these balconies are an essential part. They are not peripheral. They are not something that you could drop away. They are absolutely essential. But on top of that, they also, by providing the connected open space to living rooms off the land, allow the building itself, the box of the building, to be commensurately bigger. And that, again, is part of the problem of this application.
Okay.
So I believe, firstly, that the approval of the department is necessary. They are the owner of that land. Secondly, it should be considered that that is a direct cause of making the building larger. And thirdly, the balconies that are provided are woefully short of the minimum dimensions required for apartments. Now, open space for apartments is one of the most important parts of the amenity of them. And this building clearly has completely inadequate open spaces for its thing. And that, again, is part of the rationale of maximising the box on the site so that you can get your open space somewhere else.
Okay.
And it's inadequate open space at that.
Thank you.
So I believe that there is enough reason for this to absolutely be deferred. In fact, I can't even see how this application can be before you without the consent of the owner of part of the land. And we would ask you to seriously consider those amenity impacts that the R codes clearly state are a requirement that are not addressed. And finally, in your exercise of discretion under Local Planning Scheme Number 3, you must be satisfied that there is not a significant adverse impact on the adjoining property. And there is no way that this could be assessed as being appropriate for this development. We would like to see this application deferred, and we would like to see all the items that I have raised addressed by the Planning Department and by the applicant, and see where we go from there.
Thank you, John.
Very much.
Thank you. Fraser, did you want to respond to the development land's question?
Thank you. Just to reply now, I've ascertained the purpose of your question. The town has sought legal advice in relation to approval of the airspace use over the road reserve, which is in the town's care and control, and we our advice is that we are able to approve that and to enter into an arrangement with the landowner to make sure that that's affected properly and any liabilities fall within onto the landowner, not to the town. And there's a condition on the approval to that effect.
Okay, thank you.
That is clearly not the advice that we have worked on for many years. That is simply not correct. The owner of the land is the state government. Okay. They are required to approve it.
Thank you, John. Any questions? Any questions of Dr. Fiennes or John Quickness? Yes, Councillor Hamilton.
John, could you tell me what your alternative to all those items you've brought forward? What are you suggesting we do?
The most important part is the reduction in the scale of the building, so it's something closer to what is an approvable scale. And the obvious way to reduce it is to reduce the length of the building where it runs back on its very skinny sliver back towards the back of the property that blocks the light to the four consulting rooms. The building clearly needs to be pulled forward, at least at the upper levels, to allow some reasonable access to light and amenity. That is essential. And as I say, it is a constraint of the site. All sites have constraints, opportunities and constraints, and this site has some particular constraints because it is being inserted into an area that has already been fully developed. And that is why the codes are so clear in saying that where you've got an existing situation and where you've then changed the ground rules, as in the town centre design guidelines that now have changed what's happening, you must consider what is already there and has been already approved and already built. So the only way to do that is to do something that restricts the size of the building as it stretches along the back of the property. I would also say that those bedrooms that form that long skinny tail, which is the only way to use that tail, are inadequate rooms. They are under the minimum size required for rooms as well. That's another non-conformity with the codes as well. And again, for apartments, the size of rooms is very important.
Okay, thank you. Any other further questions? Yes, Councillor Wilson.
What comment would you make with regards to 19 May Street with the arguments that you're making?
Sorry, which is not in May?
The apartment block that's diagonally behind. Beside the vet, yes.
Sorry.
That's
the one back going back towards the shopping centre on the...
Yeah.
Well, it's not built up against a building like the Fremantle Medical Centre. It's got no... Firstly, it is more contained within the bulk of the town centre, which is clearly how the town centre guidelines were meant to work. As you got closer into the centre, the building got bigger. But also, it doesn't have the amenity impacts that this has. I mean, it didn't have to respond to an existing built environment that this application has to respond to.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions? I just have one question myself, John, and I put the same question that I put to the applicant, because you do, and I think Dr. Fiennes recognise that, you would like to see a building on there. It is a title. In terms of the construction of that and the impact of the construction, can you provide a comment? You would have heard what the applicant said. That is a workable, what we've heard today.
How a building is built is ultimately the responsibility of, the owner and effectively the builder. And yes, there are almost always ways to build a building on even the most difficult sites. I'm sure if you've watched Grand Designs, particularly in the UK, you've seen some incredible sites get built on. So yes, you can. Now, there was no question that the previously approved application was going to be tricky to build, and was probably one of the reasons it was never able to go ahead. Not because it was impossible, but because cost-wise it was difficult. This building is a far simpler box, if you, even though it's an unusual shape, it is a simpler box. And so, yes, in terms of a tilt-up approach to construction, I mean, I guess, yes, it can be done, but that isn't, you know, that isn't our concern. We believe it can be done, but we believe that this building is just fundamentally fundamentally so inconsiderate of its neighbour that it's not just inconsiderate, it falls short of actually meeting the requirements. So whether or not it can be built is neither here nor there.
Before I close, does anyone have a last call for questions for either both the applicant, Gary Lawrence, or... Do you want to respond, Gary, to any of those comments?
My comment is if...
Sorry.
If a new owner were to take possession of the medical centre, do you really think, if they were enabled to take advantage of the codes, do you really think they wouldn't take advantage of it as a full development process to the levels that they're entitled to and to the density they're entitled to, encouraged by the town? So for it to be underdeveloped is not a responsibility that I have. And the new development would build to the boundaries, as any wise developer would. As we expect, they would build to the boundaries and address the street, just the way the codes of the city has been written, and to encourage the higher density.
Okay, thank you. I just have one question, Gary, while you're up. You would have heard, a request from the opposition about mitigation you could work, but you've answered the question previously that you have no interest in...
Well, the site is challenged for its size and for its narrow footprint. And we have built to 1.94, which is the allowable plot ratio. In fact, it's 2, but we've built to 1.94. That's to provide the space for the living environment that we have. We are aware that some dimensions in the footprint of the bedrooms are not quite 3 metres, but they are 2.7, which is 9 feet. But the space that's provided and the shape provides amenity for the spaces. So with the shape of the site and the challenges for fully providing a usable space, I think we've done very well with the planning for the units. Okay. And we're going to live in it, so we believe that it's worth its value.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. If nothing further, I think we've allowed enough time. I believe we'll have questions when we come up with your item. So thank you, John and Dr. Fiennes. Moving forward, if we can, I think we're... Can we just turn that off, Mark, the speaker? Thank you. Thank you, John. Okay, so in terms of applications for leave, I think we have a number on the agenda. Do we need to read these out? Oh, before I do that, can I ask for any other application for leave? Okay, Councillor Maywood.
The 27th of August to the 11th of September.
Okay, thank you. I also have an application for leave. The first is the 8th of April to the 17th of April. And the second is 21st of September to the 2nd of October. Both of those times are when my children get married this year, so I'm making myself available. Okay. Can I please have a mover for all that leave that's in the report? Councillor Maywood, thank you. Senior Councillor Harrington. Everything for that motion, please raise your hand. And that's Approved unanimously. Thank you. Moving forward to item 9.1, which is the confirmation of the minutes. Can I have a mover, please, for that? Councillor Maywood, thank you. Seconder, Councillor White. Any comments, questions from elected members? I see there's no comments, therefore I'll put that motion. Anyone for the assembly of the minutes, please raise your hand. And that's been approved unanimously. Okay. Announcements from the presiding member. Look, the only announcement, and for those that aren't aware, in the last few weeks, we had the passing of Kevin Fox, who was a member of the East Fremantle Bowls Club, very much a committed individual for the development of the East Fremantle Community Park, the town, as well as myself, we wrote to the family as well as wrote to the club, sending our condolences. So, and like I said, we wish them the very best. Okay. Moving forward, unresolved business from previous meeting. There's nil. Reports and recommendations of committee. There is nil. Which brings us to 13, which brings us to 13.1, 14 Silas Street, mixed-use apartments. Before we put this forward, I'll ask the exec manager. Thank you. Councillor Boyd leaving the room due to the conflict of interest. Thank you. Thank you, CEO. Okay, so I ask James Bannerman to provide us an update. Thank you. And I'll remind elected members, this is a time to ask questions. I do know we no longer have a planning committee, so this is a time to ask questions that on anything that has been raised this evening. Thank you.
Okay, I'll provide a summary of the proposal and just go through some of the key planning issues. So 14 Silas Street is a three-storey mixed-use building with a rooftop terrace. It's 211 square metre corner lot at the intersection of Silas Street and St Peter's Road. It's got town centre zoning. It's got a ground floor apartment one with two bedrooms, 56 square metres, an office tenancy of 16 square metres, three car bays, a bike rack and a bin area and storeroom. And then on the first floor, apartment two, is three bedrooms, 168 square metres. And the second floor, apartment three, three bedrooms, 168 square metres. On the roof, there's a private rooftop terrace and a patio for apartment three. All the existing trees and the existing car park that are currently on site are proposed to be removed. Some key planning issues that have been identified. There's obviously a rooftop terrace and there's a rooftop terrace and discretions involved in regards to there's a rooftop terrace there and there is a lightweight rooftop structure that's set back from the building edges. It's not deemed to constitute an additional story according to the definition of stories and does not give rise to unreasonable amenity impacts, particularly given the adjoining commercial land use. There are no permanent residents that actually live within the development directly to the north. Car parking provision under clause 5.8.5 LPS of local planning scheme, there is discretion to modify parking. The WA government introduced the WA planning manual for non-residential car parking rates. and there is a deficit of one car bay on site. Each of the units, the residential units, each of them have one car bay. And it's argued that there is sufficient public parking available nearby, as well as close proximity to public transport on Canning Highway. Plot ratio. There is obviously a variation to what Local Planning Scheme 3 requires under plot ratio. However, the Town Centre Redevelopment Guidelines does talk about a plot ratio of 2 on this site. So the proposal is below the Town Centre Redevelopment Guidelines maximum and aligns with the Town Centre's intensification objectives. The Balkan scale is a result of that higher plot ratio, which the Council included in the Town Centre Redevelopment Guidelines to promote higher density and larger scale development. And Council can approve development in excess of that R40 density code that is in the Town Centre. A building bulk, scale and depth certainly recognise that the building is relatively tall, but it is in line again with the plot ratio that's in the Town Centre Redevelopment Guidelines. It doesn't cause any significant overshadowing or unacceptable overshadowing. It overshadows the road mainly. In terms of apartment size and bedroom dimensions, that's laid out in the Art Codes Volume 2, Element 4.3. It's recognised that, yes, the rooms do have slightly smaller dimensions, but the layouts remain functional and justified by the site constraints. The veranda awning width is another variation. The Town Centre Redevelopment Guidelines stipulates a width for awnings over the or along the edges over the paths of the footpath. Again, it's recognised or it's recommended support for this variation on the basis that it is a narrow frontage and it's proportional to design and provides partial shelter to pedestrians. There will be tree loss on the site. The applicant provided arborist advice in relation to the removal of the 3 trees on site. Also guidance as to landscaping. The town's operations team has looked at that report and considers it acceptable. Sight lines have also been mentioned in relation to the building on the corner of the roundabout at Silas Street and St Peter's Road. That again is not seen as an issue and was checked by the operations team. It's also got to be recognised that there is a difference between commercial and residential properties, and commercial properties do not attract the same amenity protection as residential properties. And the planning framework does not seek to protect commercial amenity in the same way that it protects residential properties in terms of outlook, property value, future redevelopment potential and so on. Where a commercial property adjoins residential development, consideration is limited to whether the proposal would unreasonably interfere with the lawful and reasonably anticipated use of the commercial land for blocking access or servicing or creating unworkable land use conflicts. Now, it is a mixed-use site. The proposed development is on a mixed-use site. It's a mixed-use building, so there is going to be, obviously, the office space on the ground floor and the residential on the stories above. So concluding, having regards to Local Planning Scheme number 3, the Town Centre Redevelopment Guidelines, State Planning Policy 7.3, the Residential Design Codes Volume 2, and also matters set out in Clause 67 of the Planning Development Local Planning Scheme's Regulations 2015. It's the opinion of officers that the proposed development represents an acceptable planning outcome. While the proposal involves a number of variations, it's considered that these variations are within the scope of discretion available to council and justified having regard to the town centre zoning, the strategic intent for strategic density, the site constraints, the design quality, the absence of completely unacceptable amenity impacts, and the contribution to the town centre activation. Accordingly, it's recommended that council grant development approval, exercising discretion to vary the relevant development standards as listed in the final recommendation of the report, subject to the conditions that are listed.
Okay. Anything further? Is it much? Okay. Any questions of the officers? Yes, Councillor White.
Just a quick one.
Yep.
I'm just interested to know the difference in the height between the northern neighbour and this current development. Thank you.
So the proposed development, three-storey height of 9.88 metres, and with the top of the stairwell, it's 11.22 metres. My understanding is that the neighbouring property at number 12 is effectively a 2.5 stories, if you consider the large window area above the rear. Sorry.
7.78 metres?
That's correct, yes. So 12 Silas Street has a parapet wall of approximately 19.5 metres long and 7.8 metres high. Yeah, so a maximum height of 7.8 metres.
Any other questions? I have a couple of questions for you, James. Start with the rooftop terrace. Is there overlooking into the number 12?
Okay. No, because the commercial property next door is a commercial property.
Okay.
And it's highlighted in the report in relation to assuming if we were to consider an R40 visual privacy requirement, it would be a 7.5 metre visual privacy setback. Mm. It is less than that, but the northern property is a commercial building and there's no automatic right to commercial to visual privacy. At the same time, if we're only looking at it from a horizontal distance, it's actually looking down significantly, and it covers, there are two windows in that building. There's an awning over one of the windows, and it would be extremely difficult to look directly into those windows from that upper story.
Which are recessed
yes.
a couple of metres yes. from the wall.
Okay, thank you. My other question refers to the balcony, because the report does talk about the balconies are under width.
Yes.
Okay. Can you talk through the compliance of how those balconies fit the variation?
So the balconies are very narrow. That they are narrower than what's required under the residential design codes, but they are they're quite long. So it was therefore deemed that this was provided an acceptable amount of open space for the upper stories that have those balconies.
Okay. But they still provide safe access?
Yes, there's very large doors opening from the living areas
okay.
Of both apartment 2 and apartment 3 that lead onto those balconies.
Okay. And while this is not a planning necessary question, One of the questions about the amount of variations that have been applied, or the amount of discretion that's been applied to this. Would you say this application has more or than the average? Because it is an unusual site and the rest of it.
And it's probably no more or less than, you know, lots depending on the application. It's quite a difficult site. The amount of variations to this codes are actually, it's not a consideration, it's the impact that you assess as mm-hmm. a result of those,
okay.
and whether you see there's cumulative impact from those, and that's the consideration.
Sure.
And okay. our advice is that we don't believe there are sufficient impacts to prevent approving this. The location of the site is challenging. It is located next door to a commercial building. The various R-code requirements and design requirements are designed to protect the residential amenity of a residential neighbouring property. This is a commercial property next door.
Mm-hmm.
There are zero lot lines on the site in our scheme. Therefore, it's assuming that you can build up to the boundary and is already contemplating some different impact to if it was a residential site with setbacks on it. So you can manage those. So we believe it is capable of approval.
Okay. Leading to that, to the district manager, the question that's been raised by the Department of Lands. So just you want to just reiterate what advice you have been given?
Yes, so we did seek legal advice on how to deal with that, and that proposal came forward, and the advice we have is reflected in the conditions in the proposal. That's up to the town to either approve that or not. And the issue for us is to ensure that there isn't any liabilities passing on to the town for the fact that they're over their mm. land. And so the condition requires that an agreement is entered into in order to address that at the applicant's expense with the town's lawyers to draft that up.
Okay, thank you. Now, I also note that I guess John Quinton has raised a number of incorrect references. Did you make note of those at all? And would I comment about any of those?
Well, I think what were raised were references to absence of assessment under the R codes, under the R codes volume 2, and I think we say there isn't a mistake and there hasn't been an absence of assessment because those matters referred to are largely referring to neighbouring residential properties, particularly when it's referring to amenity. It's not referring to commercial properties where a different standard, I think, which we've already discussed, applied.
Okay. Thank you. Different standard. Any further questions? Councillor Cutter, thank you.
More just a clarification for my own understanding. So just in terms of referencing to the point where there was a sense of cherry-picking when to apply different guidelines, it'd be helpful if you could just address that specifically. I know you've talked to when it's residential versus commercial, but just that hierarchy of the TCRG and the R codes and that sort of sense of allowing the best of both worlds, as was suggested.
Yeah, okay. So there are times when the Residential Design Codes Volume 2 does apply, but the Town Centre Redevelopment Guidelines takes precedence in this case. And what happens is you've got the local planning scheme. There are variations in the local planning scheme. You look at the Town Centre Redevelopment Guidelines, which guides council with regards to proposed development. Any proposed variations to matters in relation to local planning scheme, and items that are not covered by either the local planning scheme or the Town Centre Redevelopment Guidelines, we then look to the R codes.
So our policy deals with height and bulk and setbacks. Those are matters that we could vary under the R codes in our town centre, and that's so therefore our our guideline applies in those situations.
Councillor White? Okay, thank you. Councillor Harrington?
Thank you. So just without stating the obvious, if this building had been put forward under the old guidelines, it probably wouldn't have got through. Now that the town development guidelines have been put through, it goes through, because the medical centre falls is a commercial issue.
And do you have a question? Sorry.
Yeah, that is my question. I'm just asking, is that correct?
Look, I have not assessed this against any old guidelines, so I just can't provide you an answer to that. I think what I would say is that the current planning framework is the current planning framework, and that is what we assess the application against.
Okay. Thank you. I'm sensing there's no further questions, and therefore we'll move into debate. Can I please have a mover for item 13.1? Who would like to move the motion? Hey, Councillor White, thank you. Can I have a seconder? Councillor Maywood, thank you. Councillor White.
Thank you. My purpose was to putting my hand up was to have this discussed. I found the deputations tonight were interesting, and I think it reflects the complexity of councillors in dealing with these matters, which at times can be complex and confusing. I think it is worthy of approval because I walk past this site every day. It is a small, very awkward site, and any design there would be challenging. I do think the design, in my view, is acceptable, even in the bulk and scale. I'm very cognizant that the owner of the building on the northern side, and I can certainly understand her perspective in relation to the bulk, scale and height. And I am very empathetic to that perspective, very. However, we as councillors, or me as a councillor, I am driven by the fact that it is a town centre and there are guidelines in place. My experience on council is that discretions have to be examined in relation to the context of the application. I think that the discretions that are sought are acceptable within the context of this application. I think on that basis, I'm looking at endorsing the recommendation within the council papers. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor White. Councillor Maywood.
Thank you. Firstly, thank you to Mr. Lawrence, Dr. Fine and Mr. Kirkness for your deputations, and also thank you to Mr. Bannerman for the very comprehensive planning report. In terms of the development, I'm satisfied that it's in keeping of and meets the needs of the town centre zone, and it meets the local planning scheme. For the directions sought, and apologies, I'm looking at my notes, the directions sought for the variations to the LPS3, the town centre redevelopment guidelines, and also the R codes, I'm satisfied that those variations are acceptable and that the development be approved. I note that in the deputations there was reference to the amenity afforded to residential properties, and I'm glad that that was clarified as being different to the amenities protected under the R codes for commercial properties. I support the officer's recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you. Would anyone like to speak against the officer's recommendation? Does anyone want to speak for the recommendation? Okay. I'll begrudgingly speak for the recommendation. When I looked at this, I looked at a number of my questions pointed in the direction, particularly around the car parking, particularly the commutative use of the exercise of the variations, the veranda issue, the balcony issue. I think those all those issues, as per what we've heard to tonight, have been dealt with. The only other concern is the access to the neighbouring property via that pathway that's going to be removed, but I know that's not party to this decision, so therefore I can't really consider it, and therefore I see no avenue to not necessarily go against the officer's recommendation on this case. So anyone else want to speak before I close the debate?
I feel I should. When I looked at this building in the minutes, I just thought, my goodness, it's huge. How's it going to fit? We all would have thought the same thing. And it looks really imposing to look at it. And then once you read a bit more about it and with regard to the town centre redevelopment guidelines and all the other bits and pieces that went with that, there's been, over in Preston Point in the ward over there, we've often seen some very unusual buildings going up there, and once they get to being there, they look quite suitable. And so when you look at this building, I thought, if it's going to go anywhere in East Fremantle, probably this is a place for it, because it's right next to the Plimpton ward, which has got a lot of really unusual little buildings. And I think this will add to the complexity of the town centre itself. And so I feel really nervous about all the different guidelines and things like that, and I'm sure it's going to work out in the end. Thank you.
Okay. Councillor White, we'll have to close. Thank you.
Yes, I think the only thing I would say is that having been through a lot of planning applications, one of the unfortunate consequences is that there's always going to be perceived a winner and a loser out of this, and I don't necessarily see that this is necessarily the case, but I do understand that people involved in this discussion will probably feel that way, and I just acknowledge that very fact, but on that basis I conclude the debate. Thank you.
Okay, lovely. Therefore, I close the debate. I note the recommendation is on page 30, which includes numerous exercise of discretion. I think there's eight of them, including a number of conditions, and there's 21 conditions with sub-elements and footnotes. So, which now noting all that, I please ask to raise your hand for those who move to accept the officer recommendation. Please raise your hands. Thank you. And that's been adopted unanimously. Thank you. Decision made. So, feel free to stay. Otherwise, okay. Thank you. Moving on to 13.2. Oh, hang on. But before we do that, Councillor, waiting for Councillor Boyd to re-enter the room. On this unusual case, you can if you wish. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. Welcome, Councillor Boyd. I hope you enjoyed yourself in that room. moving forward, we're up to, I think, 13.2, which is proposed expenditure for payment in lieu in regards to the parking reserve. Thank you, James. Can I ask for a mover, please? Councillor Conson, thank you. And second up, Councillor Maywood, thank you. Councillor Conson.
Look, I'm very pleased to see that the George Street issue is being addressed. I know a lot of people are very interested and want to see some progress on that. And I think this is a very major step forward in getting some progress. I think it's going to be a fairly long process. But for me, having been a bit frustrated at the lack of process in the George Street area for so long, I'm quite pleased that we're moving along on that. And I thank Fraser for his input on this.
Thank you. Councillor Maywood.
Yes, I agree with Councillor Collinson's comments. This is an area of extreme importance to residents, and also support the officer's recommendation. Probably quite good timing given the question we had at question time earlier on in the meeting. So I support the officer's recommendation.
Okay. Is Councillor Wilson? You have a question?
Yes, I do. Thank you, Mayor. I'm in full support of the officer's recommendation. Mm-hmm. I just have one question and also a comment. The consultation process, I'm querying what retrospective review is going to take place of any previous assessments that were taken place, because I know that that is quite often a question raised by residents, that previous studies, previous work has been done to no effect. And if the case is that there's going to be no retrospective review of that, I don't see that being an issue. However, I think we need to be transparent with the community of where we're starting now with respect to previous reviews, studies, assessments, and now what we're doing to go forward. So, yeah, partly a question, partly a comment, if you could respond, please.
Yeah, for you, Mr. Mayor. I guess the starting point for me, and I'm happy to take guidance from councillors on it, is that we've been through the development of the George Street Activation Plan, quite intensive community consultation exercise, and that clearly identified, you know, three sorts of main things: the pedestrianisation or the shared space of the street, renovating and changing the park to, if it opened up, that's looking a bit more complex than we originally thought, and also ultimately dealing with the parking across the whole ward through a parking strategy, which again is fairly complex. So those are the three sorts of things where that plan is saying the council has a role, and really the only the council can lead that in with the partnership. So in terms of this one, I'm seeing the starting point as the plan of the George Street Activation Plan. I'm not thinking that we would go over historic studies or anything like that. That will be proposed that we will have consultation on various options along the street. You see there's the report talks about the town teams doing a day up there. I don't think that is going to be sufficient for us to be able to consult with the community, but I think we would advertise to the George Street Collective and into the wider community there through the newspapers. We wouldn't write to them all, but we would hold a design session over that sort of stuff with our expert in-house. I don't see us, though, going over old sort of things. It may be through that process matters are raised, and we would look at them at that point in time. So that's how I see it going forward.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. That clarifies it.
Anyone who is considering to vote against it? No. I do have one question myself. The comment that was made tonight, through question time, about the bottom end of Sewell Street, would that be covered differently?
Yes, that would be covered differently. I think it would be, we'd be just focusing on George Street. I was wondering whether I might lean on the consultant to have a little look at Duke Street as well, which is sort of constrained part of that.
Okay, there, thank you. Okay. Moving forward, anyone would like to speak for it? I see there's no interest, therefore Who moved that motion? Councillor Collinson would like to close. Anything? Nothing further. Therefore, I refer to item 13.2 and ask you to raise your hand to vote for the motion. Please raise your hands. Thank you. And that's voted unanimously. Okay. Moving forward, 13.3, the appointment of the new CAG members. Can I have a mover, please? Thank you, Councillor Cutter. A seconder? Councillor Boyd, thank you. Councillor Cutter?
Yeah, thank you. I think I'm obviously new to the Climate Action Reference Group. As a councillor, I'm also then chairing that group, and I was briefly a member of the Climate Action Reference Group, so I'm aware that it's had quite a bit of turnover in the last 12 months. So I'm really pleased to see that it's got a full cohort of applications and was really impressed with the range of skills that are being put forward in all the applications. And given that the CAG was set up essentially born of community pressure to see the Climate Action Plan really get delivered, and that that group is and continues to be the custodians of ensuring that the town can continue to deliver on its promises and its commitments to the town, I think the calibre of the people who've applied, and I don't know any of them personally, is a testament to continued interest in the matter, but also brings new skills, new perspectives, and I look forward to seeing how they can contribute to the group as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Boyd.
Thank you. Would like to just second what Councillor Cutter said there. It's great to see that level of commitment and enthusiasm from the community.
Lovely. Thank you. Does someone want to speak for? Thank you, Councillor.
Yes, just a little bit to add, because we have lost some very important members of our CAG committee, because if you count Rebecca, who left before, who were really the people that were driving it for so long. So it's going to be quite interesting to see how it does evolve in the new situation. But yes, I'm obviously pleased that we've got plenty of new applicants with new enthusiasm and keen to do what they can to, to come up with suggestions and whatever to come up with more actions. So I'm very happy with the choice, even though I'm lamenting a little bit that we've lost so much skill in the last 12 months. Mm. Yeah.
Okay. Yes, there's an opportunity for a new. Anyone like to speak against the report motion? I see there's Neil. Councillor Cutter, would like to just close comments?
Yeah, no, nothing else to add.
Thank you. If that's the case, then I point your eyes to, I think it's the recommendation of page 74 to accept. I'm on the wrong one. Okay, to accept the appointment of the six new recommended applicants. Anyone for the motion, please raise your hand. And that's been approved unanimously. Thank you. Moving on to 13.4, the review of local laws. Can I have a mover, please, for that motion? Councillor Collinson, a seconder? Councillor Maywood, thank you. Councillor Collinson? Thank you. Councillor Maywood?
No further comments from me either. Comments.
Anyone would like to speak against, for? Noting that it is very much a requirement of note. Okay, I see none. Therefore, since Councillor Constant, you don't want to speak any further, then I ask people again to refer to page 110, which sees the recommendation as noted to those 4 points. Anyone for that motion, please raise your hands, and that again approve unanimously. Okay. Moving on to 13.5, dog exercise areas. Okay. Can I have a mover, please? Councillor White, thank you. Senator? Councillor Maywood, I think I saw. Okay. Councillor White?
The report speaks for itself, Mayor. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Councillor Maywood?
No further comments from me.
Anyone who has any questions in regards to this item? No? Anyone who wants to talk against it? I see there's no interest. Therefore, I put that recommendation on page 114. Everyone for the motion, please raise your hand, and that's again approved unanimously. Okay, moving quickly, 13.6, Warhop Lighting Grant. Okay, can I have a mover, please? Councillor Cutter and seconded Councillor Collinson. Councillor Cutter.
Only just to say this is great and I look forward to seeing the new lighting installed.
Thank you. Councillor Collinson? Nothing further. I sense there's no one wants to speak against a grant. No, I don't think so. So, therefore, I will highlight the recommendations on page 118 and therefore ask you to raise your hands and approve the motion. Thank you. And that's been approved unanimously. Okay. 13.7, which is the first of the monthly financial reports for December 2025. Can I have a please a mover? Oh, you have a, okay, let's go for that question first.
My question's to Mr. Kossian. Question that I know probably sees it coming. I often raise this when this comes up is the divestment. And I see that our divestment has gone down to zero, which is rather unfortunate, given that when that policy came in, the community's expectations were very high that we're really going to do something to move away from banks that support the fossil fuel industry. So my question is, you know, what I understand the reasons why this has happened under our current policy. Are there any tinkering of the current policy that Mr. Kossian is prepared to recommend to us that would at least bring the divestment up a little bit to keep a bit more in line with community expectations without sending us down the gurgler?
Through the Chair, I believe a similar question was asked at the December Council meeting, which I provided a response to. Just to reiterate, we are looking into, I guess, fossil-free ADIs for investment opportunities, and I think at the December Council meeting I identified that community-focused banks such as the Bendigo Bank and the Adelaide Bank appeared to be the most appropriate for divestment. So we are continuing to look into that. However, I guess from an administrative perspective, I just haven't been able to prioritise, moving forward with those administrative processes. It does require a bit of time to set up bank signatories with a new financial institution, and that's something that we'll work towards in the coming months.
Thank you. Okay. Can I have a mover first? Or question? let's move first, please. Can I have a move for the... thank Councillor Cutter. Can I have a second? Councillor White, thank you. Councillor Cutter, question and move.
Do I do my question as
yes,
I move?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, thank you. I suppose, and it's something that's come up previously, and it's really around the capital expenditure. I know Councillor Wilson's previously commented on this as well, and obviously as each month goes by, the same comment is essentially being put forward, which is that there's been no significant progress. So we have commentary provided about significant variations for essentially what would be P&L type expenditure. But when it comes to the CapEx, the variations sort of have a blank field under the comments. And I feel like that would actually be quite helpful to understand the logic behind why specific things are not being spent, because I know there's been discussions. The Works Committee, the last one that was held was prior to my time. I appreciate the next one is coming up, so I may well find out more in due course, but I just thought for the benefit of all of Council, perhaps it might be useful to actually have a bit more commentary in there to sort of keep some sense of tracking along where we're at for those significant expenditures.
Thank you.
That's
thank
it
you,
for me.
Thank you.
Through the Chair, yes, there's a fairly detailed report that will be going to the Works Committee that should be published on Wednesday, and that provides a fairly extensive update on each project and where that is. And I believe everybody gets a copy of it anyway, but there's no issue in forwarding that to all councillors.
Thank you. Lovely. You have no other issues, Councillor Cutter, in regards to the motion? Okay. Councillor... No. Councillor White. Thank you.
I've got no further questions.
No further questions. Okay, lovely. Does anyone else want to speak for the report, for December report? I sense not. So therefore, I'm assuming you would not oppose. Thank you. Then I again turn your attention to, I think it's page 179, which is the receiving of the financial reports, the statement of financial activity, the statement of comprehensive income, the statement of financial position, and the capital expenditure report, and notes the municipal surplus. Everyone for that, officer, please raise your hand, and that's approved unanimously. Moving forward to 13.8, which is the monthly financial report for January. Can I have a mover, please? Councillor Wilson, thank you. Can I have a seconder? Councillor White. Councillor Wilson.
No, Councillor Cutter stole my question, so I await the capital expenditure progress report in the Works Committee. But, it's concerning as we approach the six-month mark, as we
thank you.
Run towards the end of the year. But thank you very much for the report. Is.
Councillor White?
No further questions.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? Look, I just have one question, and maybe we should raise the first one, and to the Executive Manager of Financial Services. The OAG financial audit, that's, I think the report refers that back to March, and we expect to get that back. That's correct?
Through the Chair, there is a status update being presented to the Audit Risk and Improvement Committee later this month. I did reach out to the Office of the Auditor General today just to ascertain how the audit timeline is progressing. I was informed that there has been further delay with Belgravia's auditors preparing the component audit file for OAG. As of today, the timeline has been put back by a week. Hopefully we're still on track to receive the auditor's report by the week ending the 13th of March, which will allow Council to consider the annual report at the March Council meeting, which will then allow for the annual meeting of electors to be set hopefully in early to mid-April.
Lovely. Thank you. Thank you, Councillor. Thank you, Peter Christian. Anyone further in regards to this item? I see that, there's no... Councillor Wilson, you're okay? Fine. Therefore, I again turn your attention to page... I think it's around 200 or so. Okay, everyone for the receiving the report, please raise your hand, and that's approved unanimously. Thank you. 13.9, December accounts. Can I have a move, please? Councillor Wilson, thank you. Seconded Councillor White. Councillor Wilson. First Councillor Wilson, yeah, thank you.
Yes, I'm happy to move the report as proposed.
Thank you. Councillor White, anything further? Councillor Collison, you have a question?
Yes, mine's regarding EFT 40415. It's regarding the FOGO, the doggy bags. And it was something that I did raise before about the need for compostable bags. It's $3,900 was spent on compostable bags, and given that it's all going to incineration, the need for compostable bags isn't so great. So I realise we're paying this regardless, but I was just interested to know, is this going to continue, or are we going to take on board and maybe save a few dollars by not insisting on compostable bags any longer?
Okay. I'm assuming that's to yourself, Jax.
Yeah, through the chair. So the issue isn't just the bags that are disposed of the way they should be. The issue is the bags which are thrown away as waste or end up in the environment. So we keep compostable not so much to do with the disposal, but to do with ensuring that the environment's kept clean of plastic.
Makes sense. Thank you. Any further questions?